We welcome in the professor, Ron Wotus. As I say in spring training, I say hello to you February 14th. And you know what I say? I said, I'll see you in April.
That's right. Happy Easter, Marty. Yeah, it's nice to get the season underway. And we joke about it in Arizona. It's a long spring. A lot of games and a lot of work to be done. So it's nice to get back home here and get in our regular routine and play games for real.
Yeah, what a beginning of a season. You know, I kind of said the other day, my motto now is expect the unexpected. I mean, look at just what's happened to the team coming out of spring training. Number one, it's hard enough to evaluate people in spring training, right?
That's no question.
Beginning of it.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. There's been, you know, in your career, you think about guys that have made teams out of spring training or guys that have looked tremendous in spring training. They get an opportunity. They don't get the job done or vice versa, you know. And it really is hard to evaluate. There's a number of reasons why. Obviously, you know, it's a short period of time. The other side of it, pitchers are throwing fastballs. They're not throwing their breaking balls. You have some players coming from cold climates who are really just getting into the swing of things, and you have other players that have been playing winter ball all year in a warm climate, and they're more game ready. But the bottom line is you have to evaluate with a grain of salt. That's been my experience with it. And if a guy has a track record and you know the character of the person, you usually put that ahead of technical evaluation and what he's doing on the field and can he play in the major leagues.
Yeah, and especially someone like Chris Marrero, who comes in with 4,500, you know, AAA at-bats and minor league at-bats and has this tremendous spring training, but you don't know what you're going to get until the lights come on, so to speak, and there is an adjustment period. And to me, it looks like the last couple of days, he's kind of adjusted back to looking like he did in spring training.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's a lot different. Obviously, Arizona's a little easier to hit in the spring because the ball doesn't break quite as much. You have the light air, the ball carries. But you're right. He had a tremendous spring for us and put up quality at bats. And when you look at him and you look at his career, the way he swung the bat in spring training, his track record in the minor leagues, I mean, this isn't a green pea who's just fallen off the turnip truck. This guy here is put in the games played. So when he gets to the big leagues, you expect that he understands what it is to be a major leaguer. But lights come on and you're facing good pitching every single night. And I think he was pressing a little bit. That's the easy thing to do. He wanted it bad. He certainly played his butt off and won the spot on the team, and he was pressing. And now he got his first home run, swinging the bat a little bit better the last couple games. And we expect he'll settle in and do what he's capable of doing, the reason why he made the team.
Yeah, he got a big hit yesterday. I thought you were going to get no hit yesterday. Chatwood was outstanding, and he pitches well on the road and pitches well here, especially.
Yeah, he's very good. I guess on the road last year, he was one of the top pitchers in baseball. It is more difficult to pitch in Colorado. We all know that. But he had that type of stuff. I mean, you see hitters, you know, how they react to his fastball, and we had a hard time squaring it up. I've seen good hitters who aren't late on a fastball on our club getting beat with the fastball. I heard he had tremendous movement. You know, he had run, he had cut. He's got a pretty good slider there too. So, he's very good yesterday, outstanding. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding with the start that he put up.
Yeah. And also yesterday, of course, not just losing the game, and Matt Moore didn't have his best stuff yesterday, but you lost a left fielder yesterday. And, you know, there are players in the outfield that they don't run into walls. And of course, you know, in the old days, the wall was brick. You know, and of course, Wrigley, you got the vines and there's brick behind there. But it's a dangerous profession being in the outfield. Willie Mays never ran into a wall, I'll tell you that. Huh. But Jarrett Parker had to make the play. And how did you see it?
Well, you know, there's players of all different situations. You talked about Willie Mays and a guy that had a run in the brick walls. I think that's a little bit different than Jarrett Parker getting a chance to play left field and establish himself as a major leaguer. Look, you never want anybody to get hurt or take a risk, but you see it every day. I mean, baseball is a dangerous game. I mean, you look at Buster just got hit in the head.
We'll
you know,
talk
you
about
see
that, yeah.
You see pitchers get hit in the face with line drives. My experience has been you have to do what you have to do to make the play. That was the type of player that I was. I wasn't in a situation situation where I could shy away from making a play, worrying about my own personal safety. And I've always felt if you try to play the game too cautious, that's when you get hurt. So Jared did what he had to do. He made a heck of a catch.
He did.
We're going to miss him, and you hate to see him get hurt. But, you know, he had no other choice but to try to catch the ball, and unfortunately, he was that close to the wall. He didn't shy away at all, and, you know, he came down with the injury. But we'll get him back, and we hope he heals quick.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate. You brought up the Posey beaning. And, you know, you talk about crazy things happening, you know, to start a season. Just about everything that could go wrong is going wrong. A lot of good things, but, you know, some of the experiments aren't exactly taking root, so to speak. But Posey gets hit. And then the next day, Goldschmidt gets hit. And it was okay. I mean, he got hit and he ran to first base, and that was it. And I guess, you know, no one's going to say he got hit because you can't say that, but it was baseball policing itself, and look, you hit our guy, and, you know, don't do it again.
I think everybody, you know, the pitcher who hit Buster in the head obviously wasn't trying to hit him, Walker. But anytime you hit somebody in the head, you know, it's not a good thing. And, you know, this is the major leagues, and you got to be able to throw strikes. And, I don't think there's anything that gets any of our players or any player in the game more agitated. It's when you have a pitcher on the mound who's throwing hard and is wild, and he's missing guys right and left. I mean, you got to be able to command the baseball, to some degree before somebody does get hurt. And that's the way baseball polices itself. I mean, there's things that, are a lot worse off situations when you hit somebody than when you just, you know, hit a guy in a foot or something. So, you know, that's the way it played out. And as you said, there was no issue with it.
No, and the message was sent. I mean, that's the way baseball's been played for 150 years. The message was sent. Goldschmidt understood it. He got hit. He went to first. No one looked at each other, and that was, I guess, that's it. That's the way baseball works.
Well, it has for a long, long time, but, you know, the game changes subtly, and it changes because of a lot of policies that they put into the minor leagues. We've talked about this before, right? In the minor leagues, when guys get hit, there's no policing of the game like that. You know, there's ejections right away. You can't leave your position. Guys are fined and suspended if you leave position, if there's a little bit of a pushing mash on the field, so you can't go protect your teammates. So some of these policies are trying to, you know, clean up the game so we don't have fights and brawls, which nobody wants to see. But it does change the mentality of the player, how they play the game in the minor leagues. And then when they come up to the major leagues,
really.
It tends to be the old school attitude of the way the game has always been played.
Yeah, boy, interesting. Ron Wotus with us, the professor here. Looking at some of the crazy plays of the week, we had one where Matt Moore gets almost a swinging bunt. The next thing you knew, three runs have scored. So I want you to break this down to us. There's some defensive issues on Arizona at that point. Walker, of course, has already hit Posey, so who knows what he's thinking about at that point. But the third base coach, Phil Nevin, his head's got to be on a swivel. I mean, this looked like Little League, El Cerrito Little League, people running around, but it's the major leagues, and it unfolded in front of you. What did you think, and break it down for us?
Well, it was our ground attack at its best. An RTI, as Flan liked to say, a run thrown in. And, you know, it starts with the swing and bunt. And it's a tough play. Look, you know, the pitcher doesn't want the run to score, and it was in an area for a right-handed pitcher down the first baseline. And typically what happens is, like an infielder, you try to rush the play and you make a bad throw. Well, he did. And now the thing escalates, which you see in Little League, right? Because it's the same type of deal. Now the catcher goes to get the ball, and he's in a rush because he knows the other runner's coming in to score. And the pitcher probably didn't get himself in great position at home plate because, one, they don't work on it very much. Two, he's coming in from a different angle, and he's in a rush just to get to home plate. It's not like you have a lot of time to set up. You know, the ball's hit, and here it comes. these things are all on the fly. So now the catcher makes a bad throw, and here we go. We get three runs in, and you're right. You know, Nev down there at 30, it's tough. Usually a runner, you know, you want him instinctively. He's got to play in front of him to see where the catcher and the pitcher and the infielders are. You want him to be able to make the decision whether he can go or not, because Nev's got a different angle. There's a whole lot to see, but he's going to help him the best he can, and they all did a good job, and we got the three runs in.
Yeah, because he's looking. I have to ask Phil where he was looking. I think we did chat with him a little bit about it, but you know, is he looking at the plate? He's got to see where his runners are coming from.
Well, it's tough because you got to see the runners, you got to see the infielders. Your first instinct is to send them, but you know, you don't know who's backing up in the infield when that throw gets away. I mean, it all happens quick, so it's great if the runner, as he's running, has this all in front of him, can make that determination.
Well, Parker did tell me that. He said, look, I was just hoping that panic was going. He said, I had to make sure panic was going, but once I saw panic go and I saw the ball loose and I saw how Walker was set up at the plate, he was sort of on his heels, he said, I could get in here. And I thought it was great running by Parker. You know, you always told me this, and I'll say it again, with athletes. And Parker's an athlete, unfortunately, got hurt. Eventually, the athleticism takes over.
Well, you want athletes, there's no doubt about it. I mean, yeah. You can see how important it is in this game. Even with the pitchers, you know, you look at the pitchers hitting, you know, pitchers that hustle down the first base, pitchers that can hit. It really makes an impact in a game. You know, but talking about this play a little bit, I think we should have Mr. Phil Nevin on the show. He could probably spend 15 minutes explaining what he did on that play.
Yeah, he was, I don't even know where he was standing, but I my take is he probably just watched the thing unfold in front of him and just said, where's the ball? And keep going, guys. You know, but it worked out very, very well.
Yeah, we got the three runs in, and I don't think I've ever seen that play in all my years. I've never seen a swinging bunt turn into three runs, not at the major league level.
Right. Bases loaded.
Yeah.
Very good. A couple of things came up this week. One with Joe Panik. He had a double play ball at second. And, of course, you know, the instinct is the runner's coming. You tag him and get the play at first. And it was a big moment for Cueto because after that, first of all, getting LeMahieu on the double play, hit it to Crawford, the right guy, and that was the end of that. But Panik had the ball in his glove, and the runner, I think it was Walters, hit the glove, and the ball flies out in 2-run score. And it was a big moment in the game. It made it a 4-0 game, a 4-2 game. I remember back, and I'll just go back in my memory, Eddie Stanky. You remember Eddie Stanky?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the brat. Well, Eddie Stanky in the World Series in 1951, he was a Giant, and he slid into second base, and Phil Rizzuto was the Yankee shortstop, and he put the glove down with the ball, and Stanky was this kind of player. You know, he couldn't hit, he couldn't field, he couldn't run, he couldn't do anything, but he could beat you. He was one of those guys. And he kicked the ball out of Rizzuto's glove into left field, and it's a very well-known play of World Series history. And I thought of it on this one, and I said, boy, here the ball's out of Panik's glove, and it's flying around. Runners are going all over the place. So as the fielder, what could you do? I mean, why does that happen? First of all, it wasn't like a foot kicking the ball out.
Right.
It was
right.
A shoulder. So what do you do?
Well, the first thing, you know, that I did on this play is I ran to the phone to talk to, you know, Chop and Sean Dunston. Yeah. Did the runner throw an elbow? Did he push his hand up? Did he hit at the glove? Because, you know, we were kind of blocked out on that side of the field to see if he did anything to knock the ball out. Because, you know, he can't do that either. But he wasn't that blatant with him. He just hit him hard the way he hit him in the glove, knocked the ball loose. And, you know, because most runners, you see this play at first base, right? The guy's going to tag him, and the guy gives him an elbow or something. So you can't do that. So he got away with it because it was a clean play. He just hit Joe hard, and the ball came out. And that's the difficult thing about tagging a guy with the ball in the glove. Now, Joe didn't have time to get the ball in his bare hand and tag him, but typically when that play presents itself, if you could, you want to get the ball in your bare hand so you can tag him because you have a much better grip. You know, even if you have a good pocket with the glove, sometimes they'll hit your arm, and that glove, there's no way you can keep the ball in there. So you run that risk when you tag with the glove, but again, he wasn't in position where he had time to do that. The other side of it was, you know, before that ball was hit, we were playing the guy dead pull. Crawl was way over in the hole on the hitter, and he actually told Joe, you know, in a double play ball, give me time. You know, I need a little time to get there. So I think, as a second baseman, if you can flip the ball to second and make the double play. You always want to do that unless the runner is simply right in front of you to make the tag. And, you know, Joe was in a tough spot there. I think that he didn't have time to get it in his bare hand. And you don't see it all the time, but the ball got kicked loose. And we have another fan here of the show watching. We'll have to get him in here one day
manager,
as well.
Manager Bruce Pochi. You got a lot of fans who watch you in here.
Well, they got their ears on in there. I know Murph and Mark Gardner and Billy Hayes, of course. He's been waiting all winter for today's show.
You're right, Marty. That's it.
You got that, Marty. You got that right.
You got it right. To finish up the panic situation, what about just, you know, you have the ball in the glove. Why not just secure it with the other hand as well and make the tag like that as opposed to just with the glove?
You could do that as well if the runner's in a spot where you can, where you have time to do that. But, you know, Joe was behind him and he wasn't really in a position to do that. He had to reach for the runner with the one hand to tag him because the other guy was getting down the line as well. It wasn't an easy play where the guy's right in front of him.
Okay.
And the ball got knocked loose, and I don't think you'll see that very often. I know it won't happen to Joe Panic very often, but it happens to all of us. It happened to me a few times in the minor leagues, and that's sometimes you can't do anything about it. That's why you like to try to get it in your bare hand or secure the ball when you tag a runner, if you can.
How'd you feel with the gold gloves this week? You must have been a proud man seeing your double play combination get gold gloves, and of course the catcher as well.
It's fantastic. Look, you know.
Did you get a Rolex or a car or anything?
No. I'm so happy for these guys just to see them, you know, get recognized for the job that they do. We get to watch them every day. The fans in San Francisco get to watch these guys every day to see how consistent they are. And, you know, when Craw came up, everybody said, this guy's a gold glove candidate, and he's honed his game and improved his game to cut down on the mistakes, and he is. He's the premier guy to beat for me in this league every year as far as the gold glove goes. And Joe, you know, probably people, you look at Joe and they probably didn't see that, but we see it. I mean, the coaches and his peers and the people that voted for him, Joe is as consistent as you can get in a second baseman. I mean, he is fundamentally sound. He makes all the play. He gets that ball in his glove and you're out. He turns a great double play. So I was excited to see him get acknowledged for how good of a defensive player he is.
Well, it's all the coaches too. I mean, the whole staff, you know, you prepare these guys and that's the way it is. So very good. The pitcher throws the ball where it's supposed to be thrown. Fielder makes a play and you know, it's a team. That's what happens.
Well, you know, it's been a big part of our success. Obviously, we've always pitched and played good defense, and most teams that go to the playoffs do. Not all. I mean, I remember looking down at, you know, some teams that go to the playoffs, and you look at their error total and their defense, and it wasn't very good. So, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. But it's always been a big part of our success here. Timely hitting, smart play, and, you know, not giving the other team excessive outs.
Yeah, don't beat yourself.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way it is. All right, we'll take a break with the professor here. We'll talk a little bit about getting thrown out of a game. I heard the story where you got thrown out of a game with Jose Aguacil. That's a good one. I want to talk a little bit about Arenado. He's turning into Goldschmidt and Lincecum. Something's got to be done about this guy. And also about Nunez as a third baseman. I want to get your thoughts about him. All right, we'll be back with more with the professor right after this. All right, great to have you back here on this Sunday. The professor Ron Wotus with us. Whoa, it's great to have you here. You know, it's funny, I was just mentioning the Wrigley Field bullpens are no longer on the field anymore. They put them under the bleachers. They created a new situation with plexiglass on the outside. The ball is coming off there like flubber. I mean, you don't know where the ball is going. But your guys have it. The relievers have their own little room now. How about that?
Yeah, no, they've improved it. You know, there's not a lot of room in foul ground to be sitting out there. So they just made it a little more comfortable for them, so they can sit in there and get prepared for the game. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, well, George Contos told us about it yesterday. He said they got a big couch, they got a big screen TV in there. They got everything except, you know, the cocktail waitresses coming in.
Yeah, I don't think we want them drinking martinis during the game. But, yeah, you know, we're always improving things around here. Obviously, the ballpark, you know, anything that needs a little upgrading. So, yeah, we're happy. They seem to be happy with it.
Yeah, well, he said, look, instead of, you know, looking seven heads looking down to see who's going to get called, now, you know, they're in the room and what have you. So they seem to like it. So,
yeah.
They seem to like it. So very good for them. What do you think about bullpen mounds out on the field? We saw someone trip yesterday. I think AT&T may be the last one.
Yeah, I can't recall any others off the top of my head. I know a lot of them been moved. I remember San Diego, we lost the outfielder Moore to a terrible injury, right, tripping over the mound, and it cost us a game. It was almost a fair foul ball, and he tripped over the mound. I think he broke his leg. We lost him there. It's tough. You know, there's not a lot of room there, and it's tough for the outfielders. And when you're going full blast, and now you have to deal with that mound, you go up it and you come back down, and that ball, you know, presents itself in an area. You might be going down that slope or whatever. It's not a good situation to be in. You know, if you have the room, obviously, it's nice to have them in an area where you know, you don't have that on the field. So we could be the last one that has them on the field.
Maybe so. We'll see. That one may be going like the screen behind home plate. Maybe the danger to the player. You know, people are concerned about this in baseball now. So maybe we'll see something on that. I want to talk to you about Nunez and just about third baseman. And in my lifetime, and I know Dave Righetti listens to this show and different people, Brooks Robinson was the best I ever saw at guarding the line.
Mm-hmm.
The ball just could never get down the line on him. And then I saw Eric Chavez, and and the ball never got past him at third base. It never got past him. I said to him, how come? I said, well, what do you do? He says, I guard the line.
Right.
And so I started thinking about it because we've seen some balls go down the line here.
Yeah.
What does a third baseman do? Do you play the hole? Do you play the line? How do you teach a third baseman? Because you don't want doubles, but then again, you don't want, you know, move the line along with all the hits.
Right. Well, I think different organizations and different managers and coaches have different philosophies on that. You see a lot of teams playing no doubles early in the game. You know, you have a Bumgarner on a mound against a Greinke. You know it's going to be a low-scoring game. And, you know, you're two outs in the third inning, and the outfielders are playing really, really deep, where they want to make a team get three hits to get a run, opposed to, you know, a quick double and a single. Same thing at first and third. I think St. Louis, I recall them last year, playing the lines an awful lot early in the game. So it's more of an individual philosophy. Obviously, late in the game, I think in general, baseball guards the lines. You get no double situation when it's the go-ahead or tying run late in the game. But for us, I've always believed that more balls are going in the hole between short and third than they are going down the line. So we try to position off the line. And if you remember David Bell, who played here for us, he was one of the first players that really pushed the envelope at third base of playing off the line. You see it with left-hand hitters. You see the guys, the third baseman way off the line. But he would do it with right-hand hitters. And, you know, you really, the smart players, I think, position themselves accordingly to the pitcher. And, you know, we try to help them with that. But if you can play off the line, you know, most right-handed hitters that are up, and it's a right-handed pitcher, unless it's a sinker ball or a guy that you have to pitch in, they're throwing the fastball and the breaking ball away a majority of the time. So you think about Brian Wilson on the mound for us. When he was pitching here, we very seldom even played the line late in the game. He's throwing 95. He's throwing on the outside corner fastballs and sliders. Now, what righty is going to pull the ball down the line? So we wanted to take away that base hit in the hole. The problem with that is if a pitcher does make a mistake or hangs a pitch, now the ball's pulled and it's pulled down the line. Now you gave him the double. So you have to really look at the whole picture, your pitcher, the pitcher's location, what kind of pitcher is he? If he's a sinker baller and he's sinking the ball in on the hitters, you got to play on the line. So it goes into a lot more depth than just playing the line or not playing the line. But we do like a player. If a guy's pitching away, we want the third baseman off the line to take that that hit away in the hole.
And also depends on the shortstop and the range of the shortstop, I imagine, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and that's what really helps the middle, the shortstop. If the third baseman can play off the line, he can play a little straighter and take the middle of the field. You know, obviously, if the third baseman's off the line, a shortstop doesn't have to be, you know, in a pole position. So we feel like more balls are hit in the middle of the field. We want to take away the middle of the field opposed to the lines, but you have to, you know, be prudent and use good judgment. You just can't give them the line late or when a particular pitcher is pitching in. So.
Boy, yeah, the professor, no, this is good because there's so much involved in the pitch and where it's going to be. I'm just saying, as you're talking, I'm thinking of Strickland, how he pitches, or Law, how he pitches. And what about Melanson? Do you know enough about him yet? How do you position your players with Melanson?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Mark's really in tune with the defensive alignments and the information he got pitching in Pittsburgh and the other places as far as where they hit the ball against him, and we've looked at that ourselves here. You know, everybody's always looking at the spray chart of where the hitter hits the ball, the hitter's tendencies, but we also look at, and Mark's big on that, is where do they hit the ball against a particular pitcher. So we have his charts on the tendencies of a lefty where they hit it off of Melanson and what righties do. Now, it varies a little bit, and you have to know that, but you know, he throws his cutter to both sides of the plate, but it all boils down to, Marty, you know, how you're going to pitch a guy, and the more in tune everybody is on how we're going to get the guy out and what the pitcher's going to do, the fielders will position themselves according to that.
All right. Well, I've seen enough of Arenado. I saw with Lincecum and Goldschmidt, I said eventually, roll the ball in. It's enough already. Arenado, well, I'm telling you, the guy, it's uncanny, and I don't know what you can do with him. You know, in the way the game is played today, knock him down. I mean, it doesn't happen. You know, you don't knock people down.
Right.
But, boy, I'll tell you, this guy has a whammy on the Giants, and it's amazing. And what do you do with him?
Well, he's a good hitter. There's no doubt about it, you know, and the thing that makes it difficult, pitching to him is, you know, if you're playing in Colorado, first of all, the more time you walk guys and the more guys you get on base, you know, there's not a donkey hitting behind him. He's got guys hitting behind him like Gonzalez, Cargo, and these guys that hit the ball out of the ballpark. So, you know, it's hard. It's much easier to walk a guy or pitch more careful to a guy when the guy behind him, you feel like he's an easier out. Now, so it depends on the matchups, but, you know, and pitchers, you know, pitchers are proud, you know, they like getting guys out, you know, they like attacking the hitters, but you got to be prudent with them. You can't, you know, every time you go into a series, you look at the other team and you say, who's the guy that's swinging the bat hot?
Yeah.
You know, who's hot? Who is the guy that you don't want to beat you? And for us, his name's on the top of the list all the time because he hits us very well.
Yeah, yeah, whatever it takes. You know, walk him, throw the ball in the dirt, make him hit a pitch that's out of the strikes and do something. But, boy, it's incredible because it's the home run, the hit, and it's happened. You know, I think he's one of the top active hitters against the Giants now in baseball. So,
yeah, yeah.
And you see it every game. Last thought for you. I know you got to get to work. Nice that Jose Aguacil is back. What an incident, my God. I saw it in front of me in surprise, and thank God the trainers were all over it, and Eric did a great job of getting out there, and everyone took care of him. But he's an interesting guy. You've had him in the minor leagues. You've been with him. And I asked you this about it. You don't get thrown out that often. I know you get thrown out every once in a while. But you had an incident with Jose where you ended up getting thrown out of a game, and so did he.
Yeah. Well, I wish Augie was here to tell the story because he's much better at it than I am. And he's got a great perspective on it. We were in AA. I was managing in Shreveport. And Augie just got called up from our A-ball club. And first of all, he gets called up. We're in Midland, Texas. He gets called up. Of course, they lose his luggage, the poor guy. So he gets to the ballpark. We have one night he doesn't play. Now the next day he shows up to the ballpark, and he's coming down with the chicken pox. So he lost his luggage. Now he has a chicken pox. And I don't know why for the life of me that he was still at the ballpark, because in today's game, if you had the chicken pox, you'd be sent home, get away from everybody. So he was beside himself. I mean, you know, he didn't know what the chicken pox were. He didn't know if he was going to die, what was going on. So he's on the bench during the game, and there's a bad call by the umpire. Someone starts screaming on the bench at the umpire, and the umpire says, that's enough. Well, the guy keeps going. Now he looks in our dugout. He points right at Augie, who just showed up yesterday with the chicken pox, and he points at him, and he says, you're out of here. And he throws Augie out of the game. He didn't even speak English. So there I go out to the umpire to let him know, you're picking on the wrong guy. You can't just throw anybody out. You don't know who's saying what. And, you know, the long and short of it was I got thrown out as well. And we went in and enjoyed the rest of the game.
Did you get the chicken pox?
I didn't get the chicken pox.
Did you have it as a kid?
I don't remember if I did, but it was probably a good thing that Augie did get thrown out to get away from the rest of the team. So we didn't get the chicken pox.
Nice having him here, isn't it?
It's really good having him. You know, he's worked extremely hard, and I've known Augie a long time. He's been a huge factor in the development of all these infielders here at the major league level. I mean, without his foundation, working with the guys like Craw and Panic and, you know, Pablo Sandoval and all the guys that come through, you know, he managed last year, but he was the infield instructor for many, many years and does a great job, hard worker, very knowledgeable, and we're really lucky to have him up here, and I'm excited to have him because he helps me out a tremendous amount of the time, and it really is nice to have him
here. That's a good story. He was sitting there shivering, all covered up, and the next thing you knew, he was out of the game. Said, what did I do? I didn't do anything. I love that part of baseball. Hey, you go to Kansas City this week.
Yeah.
How about that? Remember last time you were there?
Yeah, I hope it is a successful trip as we had a few years ago. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Very good. Well, thanks so much as always.
Good being with you, Marty.
All right, that's the professor. School is out. It is Sunday morning. Always good to have him here. More coming up. KMBR 680, the sports leader.